Good morning. Thanks so much for tuning into your community radio station, KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Maria Dudzek, and we have been advertising for the last week or so about a call-in show this morning regarding the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad and the Spot Beacon program. Joining us this morning, we have Jerry Kiefer and Cara Lundy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you both for being here. And before we get into that, Jerry Kiefer, can I ask you about the rescue that happened this Saturday?
We had a sort of a beacon activation up on Deer Mountain. A gentleman was up hiking and had a knee injury and had some medical issues that resulted in some seizures. And one of the people up on the mountain that had a spot beacon checked out happened by the patient and activated the beacon and called in for his condition, and the rescue squad went up, sent a ground team up to the site, evaluated the patient and given his medical condition and the size of the patient, it was prudent to airlift him off. So we went up with Temsco and brought him down.
And about what time did that happen? Was that a morning thing, afternoon thing?
And at about 3 o'clock. It started late morning, and we were finished up by 3 or 4.
And that sounds pretty lucky that someone was up there with the beacon.
Absolutely. There were a lot of people on the mountain, a lot of help, unusual amount of people on the mountain due to the race this weekend.
Yeah, you really have to give a shout-out to the Ketchikan Running Club. They were doing the Deer Mountain Challenge this Saturday, and so several of their participants happened upon the person on their way down from the race, and they responded and stayed with him and gave assistance until we arrived, and then while we were working with him, and it was really valuable assistance from them.
Okay, wow. It's a very, very lucky situation. Unfortunately, not all are as lucky, and we want to talk today about the importance of those beacons and how you can find them. First, though, let's talk a little bit about the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad. Can you give us a little background on what it is and what that group does?
KVRS is a nonprofit corporation, and we were founded in 1950. As a result of a Pan American Airways crash over on Annette Island. And at the time, they had the only real wilderness search and rescue group that was close was the Coast Guard, and they weren't really set up at that time for any kind of on land type rescue. And a lot of that rescue was sort of staged out of the Ketchikan Fire Department at that time, and a bunch of community members got together, and they went over and they did what they could in some pretty harrowing conditions. And when that was done, they decided that there needed to be some sort of a wilderness group, and so they formed the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad. And since that time, we've been pretty lucky. The community has really supported our organization, and it's nonprofit. It's all volunteer. There's no paid staff. Funded by local grants and donations primarily.
And Cara, how long have you been involved with KVRS?
I think we're getting on right around 10 years or so.
And how has your experience been?
Oh, it's been a great experience. I think, when you're a person who likes to spend a lot of time outside and, for one thing, I feel a sort of obligation that I could end up in a situation. Anyone can get unlucky. We're not in control of everything when we're out enjoying the outdoors. And so I figure if I want the organization to exist, if I want that response to exist, then I should be responsible for helping to make that possible for other people in case I ever need it or someone that I care about needs it. So it's been really positive as far as just getting to know a community of people who want to serve our community that way and enjoy the outdoors socially. It's been a really rich experience and just a great opportunity to help people in real significant times of need. So I really enjoy it. I really value the organization a lot.
About how many volunteers do you have?
Well, like all volunteer groups, we can claim 40 personnel on the rolls. Out of that, though, there are there are about 20 really solid folks, and most rescues, we can get 12 very quickly.
What kind of training is involved in joining the group?
Bit depends on what your real interest is. KVRS has a canine rescue group. They've got a high angle group. They've got a mountain rescue group. They've got a maritime response group, and they also have a command and control and radio detection group. So we have a lot of different aspects that we train for, and each particular discipline has their own training schedule. Obviously, when we talk about training for radio detection for EPIRBs and ELTs, that doesn't need weekly training. However, the Mountain Rescue Group and the High Angle Group train pretty much weekly.
And what are EPIRBs and ELTs?
Emergency locator beacons in aircraft and on boats.
Okay. So someone, if maybe you're not exactly the outdoorsy type, but you would be good in the radio realm of things, you can contribute.
Absolutely. Radio operators, people to run the office. If you are an office person, that's what you work with on a daily basis, you'll fit right in. Putting 8 or 10 people up on the mountain in the middle of the night, it takes those 8 people to get there, but it takes 12 to get them, to support them once they're there. So there's a lot of work done not in the woods.
And I, imagine it just depends, obviously, circumstances and whatnot, but about how often are you called to help? Does it seem to be a regular thing? It's sporadic?
It is a little sporadic. It sort of comes and goes. We always have believed the three, that everything comes in threes, so we'll get kind of a rash of calls. We generally run about 20 to 30 operations a year. Not all of them are to the extent that we operated this weekend. Sometimes it's simple as tracking down a cruise ship passenger that had a spot, or going out to shut an ELT off in an airplane that was malfunctioning. So, but safe bet that we have about 30 operations a year.
Okay, and this is a call-in show, so if anyone has some questions about the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad or the Spot Beacon program, which we're going to talk about in just a moment, give us a call at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And let's talk about the Spot Beacons. Explain what those are and how they're used.
Well, a Spot Beacon is it's a commercial product developed by Spot LLC. Their main office is out of Texas. And that beacon, what it does is it monitors its GPS location, and then it can send a signal through a satellite down to a ground station in Texas if there's some sort of an emergency, or it can send a signal that the person's okay, depending on how you activate it. It also has a function. The reason we selected this particular one, it has a function to passively track the beacon. And so that however it's set up, every 5 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, it will send a signal up to the satellite, and it'll put a little dot on our computer map so that we know where the beacon's at. And that's one of the reasons we selected that beacon.
Did I understand that you've changed there used to be a different beacon, or you're getting a new type of beacon? Or
well, the ones that we've, this program now is 6 or 6 years old, somewhere in there. And so the beacons that we originally had, they, like everything else, they've got new models that have come out. So the beacons are, they did a very good job of making them very similar, and they operate exactly the same way, which is good for us. So we don't have two different beacons out there that we're trying to teach you the people that pick them up how to use, but they look just slightly different. But they're essentially do the same thing.
And in the other one, you actually had to activate it yourself, correct? So in this case, with the passive, if someone was injured and couldn't, you'd have a clue where they're at.
Yeah, the the OK function, the signal that the beacon can send that says, hey, I'm OK, is manually activated. And the portion where the beacon alarms and for an emergency is also manually activated. Both of the beacons will do the passive tracking, and that's why we selected it. And for that reason, we have a lot of folks that go out in boats, they go out in aircraft. They may not be able to get to the beacon if they get into trouble. We've had them that people have the beacon on their boat and their boat drifts off. While they're stranded on the beach, they can't get to the beacon to activate it. The beacon's on the boat, but our dispatchers can watch that, and when they see that boat in a place it shouldn't be, floating down the middle of the channel, we may not activate a search and rescue, but we can send somebody out to see if there's a problem.
That being said, as far as the passive tracking goes, it's not like you can pick up the beacon, have it just be off, not read your flyer about how to operate it, and have it track you. You do have to turn it on, and you have to put it on tracking mode. And so anytime someone checks out a beacon for free, they should receive an information flyer about how to operate the beacon, and they should review that flyer before they go out and are in an emergency. Because when you're panicked, it's a really poor time to learn how to use your equipment. So it's important that folks turn it on, and if they and we really like it if they do turn it on to tracking mode, and know how to use it. So look at that flyer, know how to use the beacon before you go on your trip.
And you mentioned that they're available for free. Where can people borrow them?
We are partnered with the public library and with the Visitors Bureau down on the docks, and with the Alaska State Troopers. So at those three locations, you can check them out for free, and you fill out a trip plan that gives us information about where you're going, how you're getting there, and what your plans are, how long you plan to stay. And that gets sent in to us. And then you are free to use the beacon and then return it once you're done.
And about, is there a limit on how or maximum amount of time you can borrow one? Can you have a fairly long trip, or is it just for short trips? Or?
Well, they're designed for short trips. They're not, on occasion, a beacon for special circumstances can be deployed for a longer period of time, a week, 10 days, 2 weeks. The batteries in the beacons will last about 7 days. So like Carl was saying, we typically encourage people to turn the beacon on and put it in the track mode and then just go have fun. Longer trips, however, you anticipate carrying extra batteries for it. And also shutting the beacon off at night. If you go out to a lake, for instance, and you go out and fish at the lake or hike or whatever you're going to do, when you get back to the cabin and you're in a stable spot, then you can send it. We have people send an OK message saying that the beacon's back to where they're in a safe place. They send an OK message, and then they shut the beacon off, and that saves batteries. Next morning, they fire the beacon back up, send another OK message, and before they leave for the day, and that's a way to save the batteries. But on those trips, you need to anticipate taking batteries with you.
And are they just regular, like AA batteries, or you have to have special batteries?
No, just AAA batteries.
AAA, okay. And can you give maybe some examples of how the beacon was used successfully and saved time in a rescue?
Well, certainly Deer Mountain is a good example. There was last year we had a hiker that came off one of the cruise ships that was up, that took one of the beacons, went up Deer Mountain and slipped on a wet log and broke her ankle. The beacon was deployed, and we would not have known because they were the last person on the mountain that particular day. We would not have known that person couldn't get until they got back and was missed on the ship. without
because there was not another hiker coming down or anybody else up there.
This weekend, very lucky, we had lots of people on the mountain. That particular case, we wouldn't have known, and it would have been likely that we would not have known about her condition or her predicament until the next day if somebody went up the next day. We've had several like that, a medical issue north of town about 10, 15 miles off the road system where the person had an abdominal problem and decided they couldn't go any farther and activated the beacon. They were in a place that nobody even flies through. So in cases like that, they're really, truly the only way you can get word out that there is an emergency.
Okay, and again, this is a call-in show, so if you have any questions, give us a call at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. When people go out hiking, aside from having a beacon, are there things that they can do to be prepared that would better help you should a situation arise and the rescue squad needs to be there? What kind of things maybe should people think about when they're heading out?
Well, first of all, tell someone where you're going and what your plans are and when you're going to come back, and stick to that plan. So that's really important. That's really a basic. And that can be as simple as texting a buddy that you're going out somewhere and what your plans are. You can also go to our website, which is ketchikanrescue.org. And we have a trip plan that you can fill out there on the website, even if you're not checking out a spot beacon. So that's one of it. And then one aspect. And then also just bring a little more than what you think you need for what you're doing. So if you're going away from the road system, just consider that if you have a problem, and like I said, sometimes people end up in trouble because they get lost or get confused or maybe they make some really bad decisions, but people can also just get really unlucky. Anyone can slip on a slippery log and twist their ankle or hit their head. That can happen to anybody. And anybody really, especially when you're going off trail, can get turned around. It's not difficult in our terrain. So bringing some supplies with you, some basic stuff, some survival supplies. Know where you're going. Be able to navigate, especially if you're going off trail. Bring a GPS device, compass. Know how to use them. Have a way to call for help if you need it. Cell phones don't always work, but sometimes they do. Cell phones, also smartphones these days. The iPhone has a compass app in it that you can open up and it'll give you your GPS coordinates. So get familiar with that. If you're able to give us coordinates, even if you don't have a spot beacon, of course we want to encourage people to use the spot beacon program. That's really the best. But if you don't have that, with you, knowing how to get GPS coordinates off of your phone is really valuable. Us knowing where you are is just the first step in a response, and it saves so much time. But then just your basic survival supplies. Have something to make a fire. Have something to make a very basic shelter. An emergency blanket is so light and cheap, the foil little folding blankets, and you can use them to make shelter. You can wrap yourself up in it to keep from getting hypothermic. Have a little bit of extra clothes with you. Even if you're planning on moving light and fast, if you twist your ankle and you end up on the cold ground for hours, you're going to get really cold. So have a little something extra to just make it a little more possible to give you more time. And then, of course, food and water. If you're dehydrated and calorie depleted and your brain doesn't work as well.
And a couple of things that you mentioned, and I know the first one about making sure you tell someone where you're going, but also, as you said, stick with the plan, because I know that has happened before where someone says, I'm going wherever, but then they change their mind and end up in a completely different location. You're all nodding your heads.
And with the cell phone usage, we're getting more and more of our notifications through the cell system. And it's getting better. It really is getting better. And I highly encourage anybody to make sure before they go that their cell phone is, A, charged, and that they take it with them, even if they don't intend on using it. Even if they don't think they're going to have cell phone service there, you know, it's a good idea to take that phone with. And it gives us a spot to look. If we, you know, if we don't have a trip plan and we don't, the person has no way to notify that they're in trouble. We just get a call from a concerned parent that yes, my, you know, my loved one went out to Silvis Lake and they were going to hike a trail. That's literally several hundred miles, square miles of country we have to go. We kind of know where people go, but we're going on historical data. And it's much better to have a trip plan to know that they were going to take this trail and they were going to stay here and they were going to come back this date.
Okay, yeah, and it's while you say it's important to bring a cell phone, do realize you may or may not have coverage. So, as you said, the spot beacon is a good way to go. And we have a caller. Victoria joins us. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning. I just want to thank you guys for the great show. It's very important information, and it worked really well for us because Monday and Tuesday of next week, we're having a wilderness first aid class for youth here. And a lot of the information that you're giving, we're going to be reiterating to the kids. And it's so important to let people know where you're going, because we have Sunahay Mountain that people go up and down all the time. But it's the first part's a pretty well-defined trail, but you can get really lost up on top, and it happens frequently. So I just appreciate all the good information.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Victoria Marriott over there on Prince of Wales Island in Craig. And this is actually an excellent question. Somebody called in and just said, can people link their personally owned private spots into the KVRS system? Jerry's pausing.
That's something that we've talked about that from the very start. And, you know, being very transparent here, spot beacons come with some baggage, you might say, in that in other places, other locations, that there's been some issues with people deploying the beacons for things that weren't truly an emergency. You know, for instance, there are stories out there where the helicopter shows up and locates the party, and the question, there was no injury or no any problem. They just wanted to know if the water was good to drink in this particular creek. So a lot of agencies, this is the first outside, I think, of Barrow Search and Rescue that has beacons for their own people. This is the first program in Alaska that loans these out, specifically targeted for the community and people, off visitors to the community. Our concern, and has always been, the private beacons, we don't really know. We don't have any control over how they're maintained. Do they have batteries in them? And if people go out and the beacon isn't maintained, it isn't checked regularly, and they go out and deploy the beacon and the batteries are dead, or for some reason, in fact, we have one today that we're testing because it doesn't seem to want to lock onto its GPS. And if we hadn't tested that today, it would have gone out, could have been loaned to somebody, and it wouldn't have worked when they got out there. And that's a concern of ours. We don't know how you know, the private beacon would be maintained, and we do a really good job of and treat our beacons very, very, very carefully, and we still have two or three a year that have failures. So currently, no. Although the board recognizes, and I think that the program has proved that truly anybody walking out off the road system can benefit from having one of these beacons. And the program is fairly expensive. to operate. And we're just not, and we understand, we're not going to be able to provide enough beacons so that everybody can have one when they go out. We understand that. So the board does kind of regularly talk about the need or the desire to have private beacons being monitored by KVRS dispatchers, but we're not there yet.
Okay. So currently, if someone has a private beacon, they have a buddy who monitors them? How does that work?
Well, that's sort of the problem. Generally, if you get a beacon for Christmas, and I don't know how many I've set up for families, that you typically today you will put your home phone number down as the number one contact, and your number two contact, you generally put your wife or your husband's phone cell phone number down. And then generally they will put down, as the third emergency contact, they will put down a family member. And then they all go out to the cabin. And so all your emergency contacts are either with you or not available. The message still gets through. However, it takes a very circuitous route and takes up a lot of time to get to us. The ground station in Texas will call the Alameda, California, which is the RCC center for the West Coast, which calls the RCC up in Anchorage, which calls the Coast Guard in Juneau, which calls the troopers back in Anchorage, which calls Ketchikan Trooper Post. And when Ketchikan Post gets the information, then they call us. So the message will get there, but there's a lot of failure points along the way.
Okay, and we do have another caller. Brett joins us. Good morning.
Hi. I'm wondering where I can go with this spot and if there's any limited coverage. And what happens if I take one out of town?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, the spot beacons will work anywhere in the world, with some exceptions, I believe, in Antarctica. So they'll work everywhere. And the difficulty in taking a beacon, you say, out of town, if you know, we've had beacons deployed over in Europe and Australia, Japan. The difficulty, however, is when the beacon's activated, the duty officer for KVRS gets the emergency activation notice. They will have to know. KVRS then would have to know what kind of rescue services are available in those foreign countries. And that's been very, very difficult. Taking a beacon out of town, going over to Prince of Wales, we know who to call over there. We typically respond over there. So while we don't refuse to send those beacons out, the beacons are designed to operate within our local area, inside our scope of service, which is southern southeast.
And if someone is out on a boating trip or hiking trip, I mean, that's something they can check out and use.
By all means, yes, absolutely. So we don't want to give the impression that the spot beacons are only for use here, you know, on our very local trails here right out of town. If you're going out into misty fjords, you're going out on a wilderness trip, you're going over to Prince of Wales, you're going hunting up on a ridgeline somewhere, absolutely, please check them out. We would really encourage that for sure.
Okay, and we had a caller call in. If you could say again where people can check these beacons out, the three locations.
The library, the Ketchikan Visitors Bureau down on the docks, down on the cruise ship docks, and the trooper station out by Ward Cove.
Okay,
are the three locations.
When you speak about the Visitors Bureau, isn't it where people get their buy trips as opposed to the little kiosk building, or which building is it? There's several visitor bureau options down there.
The Brown Visitor Center, the main one with the restrooms, right on, I believe it would be Berth 1.
It's where they,
oh, where,
you,
the
where you can
are,
buy
okay.
all the flight scene.
Yeah, trips, okay, yeah. All right. So near the statue, the
exactly.
rock statue, the
yes.
one near the
right
statue.
There. Yep.
Okay. Very, very good. And again, we just have a couple of minutes left. So if there's any last minute callers, give us a call at 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And it sounds like a lot of interest out there. I'm glad to be able to get this word out to people. Is there anything else that you wanted to get out to folks, any info you want to make them aware of?
Well, just kind of a shout-out, really, to the community. You know, this is great being able to come in and visit today. We don't often get the opportunity to truly thank the people that make this organization work. And yes, all of our volunteers, you know, they never get thanks enough. But the community is the folks that step up and support this organization. Without community support, we just don't exist. We can't afford to, you know, for instance, the helicopter that was used today, this weekend. We can't afford to buy our own helicopter. It's just not in the cards. We can't buy it, can't run it, can't maintain it. We need the support from the community. And this particular case, the helicopter that was used was a chartered aircraft. But there are people that fly helicopters and fixed wings for us, and they don't ever charge for their service. There's people that get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and spend the next week off of work working at work in a situation case. And those are the people that really makes KVRS work.
Okay, so this is somebody, I guess, looking for assistance. Are you there to maybe help people calibrate a compass on their smartphone and make sure it's correct? Do you know anything? Like, can people come by and seek how to use, I guess, their compass and whatnot?
Yeah, we deal with several different of the main smartphones, so we kind of know how they work. We can certainly give people tips and pointers on how to best set them up in case they want they need one. The calibration portion and the accuracy of the cell phone, we found that are a little bit dependent on cell phone signal and the GPS and the way it interfaces with the GPS, but they give us a general location. The last one that we had cell phone coordinates for weren't terribly accurate. However, it got us right to the area that we were able to perform the rescue. So, sure, you call the office and we can walk you through most all of the, you know, the newer cell phones and show you which apps that we typically see and the ones that are easy to use.
Okay, and a couple quick questions. You say you couldn't do this without the support of the community. I'm guessing you're meaning financial support.
Well, financial support, yes. You know, since the closure of Ketchikan Pulp Company, our donations, like probably all donations in town, are way down. Support the Blueberry Arts Festival was a great fundraiser for us, and all the people that showed up, that money goes into our search and rescue account, and that's what we use to do what we did this weekend. But also people's time and effort, you know, to getting out the weekly training, answering the phone, answering the call at 3 a.m, support that way too, not just financial.
Okay, so if someone is interested in getting involved, what is the best way to find you?
So we do have a website. We also have a Facebook page that we keep regularly updated. Our website is ketchikanrescue.org, and there is a way to donate on the website. We do, like Jerry mentioned, we do rely on private donations we don't have any paid staff. All of us are just unpaid volunteers, but you do need money to make this kind of stuff happen and to buy equipment that we need to maintain. So there is a donate button. You can donate with a credit card right on the website. You can also get information about volunteering. We have a membership application on there. We don't have any minimum requirements as far as what kind of training you need to come to us with. All of us are just individuals from the community who have jobs and families and other obligations, and have just decided we want to support the community this way. We really rely on employers who are willing to let us pick up and go every once in a while to go and help someone. It's never convenient to go and respond. And so we really appreciate those employers that work with us to make that possible. And then, of course, pick, click, give. When you're signing up for your dividend in the spring, assuming that still exists, we are a pick, click, give organization. And so you can donate to KVRS and pick, click, give. So there's lots of ways to get involved, and if you can't give your time, to give financial support as well.
Okay, all right. Thank you both for being here, Jerry Kiefer, Carl Lundy from the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad. Again, if you're interested in checking out one of those free spot beacons, they're at the Ketchikan Public Library, the Visitors Bureau building downtown next to the statue, and then also at the State Troopers.